So it didn't take me long when I was working on the sermon to find myself thinking about Carl Sagan and the original series Cosmos, from which that clip was taken. That's an introductory clip to that famous 13-part television series. It was first broadcast in 1980, and it had a profound effect on our culture. It was written and produced by Carl Sagan and his wife, Anne Druyan, along with astrophysicist Stephen Soder. Carl Sagan died in 1996, the age of 66, from a type of blood cancer. His wife, Anne Druyan, went on to produce a new version starring Neil deGrasse Tyson that was released in 2014. In that clip, from the introduction of the first Cosmos, Carl Sagan describes what it means for him to be present in the universe. And remember, Carl Sagan considered himself to be an agnostic. He hadn't seen proof of God to date, but he hadn't seen anything to disprove God. He wrote, "There's a tingling in the spine, a catch in the voice, that sensation as if a distant memory of falling from a great height. We know we are approaching the grandest of mysteries." It's that sense of approaching the grandest of mysteries that I would like to try to evoke this morning. And as I think about our RE classes and our children, I think if we can give one gift to our children, it would be to evoke that feeling of the grandest of mysteries that our place in the cosmos creates for us. The theme for the month of December is and has been presence. What does it mean, this presence? A presence requires a kind of emotional connection that Carl Sagan described. It's more than an intellectual state. What is it about the universe that engenders these profound emotions in us? Sagan refers to the size and the age of the universe as beyond ordinary human understanding. So let's talk for a moment about size. Most reference to the size of the universe will talk about the size of the visible universe, or the observable universe. And ultimately, that's all we can know. The laws of physics put a limit on how much of the universe we can see and observe in any way. That limit is the distance that light can travel since the Big Bang, the moment of creation. So we conclude that the observable universe is about 28 billion light years in diameter. However, we know that the universe itself has been expanding during this time. The very fabric of space has been stretching during those billions of years. And what we see at the edge of the observable universe when we look out is probably four times further away from us now than it was when the light left for us. So that would make the knowable universe about 100 billion light years in diameter. And each light year is roughly 10 trillion kilometers. Those among you who like this stuff can remember that I've often repeated the leading scientific consensus that the universe is actually infinite in dimensions. What I've described as 100 billion light years in diameter is only the part of the universe that we can ever hope to know. Scientists are telling us now that beyond that is more of the same ad infinitum. Whatever expanded at the moment of the Big Bang was not a small point, but was itself infinite. That image that we have of the Big Bang coming from a tiny point and expanding is a reference to the visible universe, what we can see. What we can see began as a small point, but around that point was the rest of the universe, which expanded presumably at the same time. Within the sphere of the observable universe are more than 100 billion galaxies, each galaxy containing 100 billion stars in round numbers. Sagan refers to the age of the universe, and we now know it to be 13.7 billion years. And scientific confirmation that the universe has an age, that in fact had a beginning, is only about 80 years old. Prior to that, the consensus was for a steady-state universe that had been this way forever. What existed before the universe? As Sagan says, it's beyond normal human understanding. Before the universe, there was no time. And if all of this isn't enough, between 1980, when the first Cosmos series was released, and 2014, just a few years, short years later, with the Neil deGrasse Tyson version, the idea of many worlds has become a legitimate scientific theory. That not only is our universe infinite in size and content, but it is only one of an infinite number of infinitely sized universes existing in parallel, but without any possible contact with one another. But it's much more than just the size of the universe that calls on our emotional presence. It's the beauty and the underlying simplicity of our universe that is most awesome. That the pure energy at the moment of the Big Bang was pregnant with all the laws of physics that would make inevitable the complex atoms and molecules that make up the stuff of the universe, and that these building blocks would then be capable of self-assembly to create the most complex thing that we know in the universe, the human brain, and the resulting consciousness and free will. All of it pregnant in those laws governing the very beginning of the universe. That's what sends a chill up my spine. Since the dawn of human history, human beings have sat outside under the night sky, fully present in the universe. That experience of sitting under a glorious night sky is becoming less and less common for humanity due to light pollution and the concentration of people in cities. But technology has made a rare event on one hand enhanced on another. It wasn't until 1993 in the repair of the Hubble telescope that we had the opportunity to experience the admittedly color-enhanced beauty of the cosmos. The Hubble telescope was launched between those two versions of the Cosmos series. And I just have a few slides, and I regret that I didn't copy a description, so you just have to appreciate them for what they are. And now, only in the last few decades, we've come to realize that what is potentially visible, the things that we can detect in the universe, make up only about 5% of what is the universe. And scientists are still struggling to define, to determine what the other 95% of the universe is. To be present in such a universe begs the question, why? Why should all of this exist? For some people, and I've talked to many people about this, and quite often people tell me, well, I don't really care why. It is, and that's all, and I just go on with my life. See, to be people that find this endlessly fascinating and people who find it boring and just want to get on with life. I think we need to nurture this sense of awe in the universe that we inhabit. Some people find some comfort in listening to scientists who tell us that they can explain the origin of the universe, that it's all completely understandable. But if you read the fine print, it is always that it's understandable given the laws of physics. Stephen Hawking has famously said, if you give me the law of gravity, I can work out everything else, explain everything else. To me, that just makes it more mysterious. why would something like the law of gravity have the potential to bring about everything else around us? And when you think about it then, what's fundamental to the universe is not what we see, it's not the rocks and the air and the gases and the stars and the galaxies. What's fundamental to the universe is the laws that govern the universe. They're unwritten. They don't exist anywhere in writing. And so, the very idea that what's important in the universe is not what we see, but these laws that govern it, that are somehow behind it all, leads to some amazing conclusions. As we've explored the universe at the smallest level, we come into things that are beyond human ability to explain in a rational sense. We know what the rules are. We can understand how quantum mechanics works on a mathematical level, but we can't appreciate it on a human level. It's beyond any human experience. And it's led to some interesting conclusions. And one of my favorite quotes is from James Jeans, an English physicist and mathematician who died in 1946. And he was speculating, thinking about the universe. And within quantum mechanics, the role of these laws and then the role of human consciousness become interwoven and become important. The role of the observer becomes important. So James Jeans, a very hard-nosed scientist, wrote, "The stream of knowledge is heading towards a non-mechanical reality. The universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a machine. Mind no longer appears to be an accidental intruder into the realm of matter. We ought rather hail it as the creator and the governor of the realm of matter." Presence. Presence in the universe. It means living and being present in the moment, being fully engaged emotionally and intellectually with whatever is happening around you. But there's a relative aspect to this presence. One might say that we're present for a friend in need. This would imply to me that we're focused on that friend or the friend's needs. And from that it would infer that we are not present for our own needs. We may not be present for another person. We can't maintain this focused presence for long, but it doesn't mean that it's not important. Instead, it makes it all the more critical to our spiritual growth. This idea of being distracted, of living in this amazing universe, but somehow having to get on with life, not be paralyzed by just the immensity of it all, leads me to an analogy. Sometimes I feel like I'm in the midst of the most amazing banquet with people and food and experiences and entertainment of all kinds. But I'm focused on a split fingernail on my hand instead of the amazing banquet that's around me. My wish for you is that you can find the time and the space and the place to sit regularly in the presence of the universe, being fully present in the moment, feeling that tingling in the spine, that catch in the voice, a faint sensation of a distant memory as if we're falling from a great height, knowing that you are approaching the greatest of all mysteries. May it be so. Amen. Happy New Year.